Well, my name is Emma. My formal name is Emily, but I go by Emma Burkamp. And like my husband Jude, I was actually born in Kansas as well and grew up there. And that's where we met. We're high school sweethearts. And we have very similar family backgrounds in the aspect that my mom is from Central America. She's from El Salvador. And my dad is from Kansas, so and spent most of his life there. So both of our dads were in the seminary. My dad was we were raised Catholic. Both of our dads were in the seminary as very young men, but then eventually got out and and met their wives and ended up having us. And so, and I'd say, you know, being raised Catholic, I think one thing that I, you know, I have a lot of mixed feelings about that particular heritage, but I think it gave me some identity and some rituals that really kind of carried on going to Catholic school and things like that. You know, spiritual practice was basically a part of your everyday life. And so, and I want to say, like, my foray into Buddhism was probably mostly connected to Jude. I think meeting Jude and having this realization that there's a lot, you know, I mean, there's a lot more to wonder about in the world, and that I was very interested in having a spiritual life, but maybe a broader spiritual life than just maybe Catholicism. So, so when we moved out to Washington State, it is a very different cultural experience here than in Kansas, obviously, and just felt a lot more freedom. You know, I think actually in both of our families, I think this is an important aspect for me anyway, but they were Democrats in a very Republican state, you know, and my folks were lifelong Democrats. And so moving up here, being able to talk about, you know, my political ideas somewhat freely. I mean, obviously, you know, there are Republicans out here too, but there's a lot more Democrats too. And so just feeling freer in that regard as well. I think that one of my first experiences with Buddhism was we went on a week-long retreat at the Zen Center in San Francisco. And so we did a week-long meditation retreat. And I remember arriving and they were doing silent like work, you know, like kind of caring for the center. I think there was somebody that lived in one of the apartments there that had just moved out. And I remember having this realization, like I was just chit-chatting, didn't realize it was like silent work, you know. It took me a little while to figure that out. But, you know, I was just talking to Jude and we're there like helping clean, and then suddenly it dawned on me, like, no one else is talking. You know, like I'm the only person talking here. So, but I remember even that idea of working mindfully, like doing chores mindfully, you know, we're cleaning, you know, we're vacuuming, cleaning toilets and doing all this kind of stuff, that there's always so much noise and so much external stimuli that when you cut all of that out, even to just do work, it doesn't really mean that you have to be sitting on the cushion. But I remember that was a really big, you know, kind of like very different experience for me. So, And that week was pretty difficult. You know, I mean, Jude was really participating with a local Zen Sangha and teacher, Ado Frances Carney, and she actually married us as well. So, so he was really into that and already participating in meditation, whereas that was really my first time meditating. And so being in the Zendo, you know, it was very austere. I remember just everybody had their own little section with their Zabaton and their cushion and just remember just struggling with the pain of sitting, you know, the physical pain of sitting. It wasn't even so much the mental, you know, like your head just won't stop. I think initially starting any practice is getting comfortable in your body and sitting, because that's huge. But I remember walking away from that feeling like I wasn't, Zen and Catholicism had a little bit, I mean, more in common as far as, you know, maybe the regimentation of the two spiritualities. But it wasn't until I had some experience with Tibetan Buddhism that I was just like, this feels like home. You know, this feels like what's comfortable. And Jude had invited me to go to India with him to visit his family. I think this was after we were married, but And part of that trip we spent in Delhi with his family, which was awesome. It was a great experience. But then we also took a trip up to Dharamsala. So we took the train and went up to Dharamsala, had an awesome, crazy taxi ride from the train station to a lot of fun, a lot of good memories. And I just remember thinking, you know, like, I didn't know what to expect. Like, okay, we're going to meet this whole group of folks that live in exile. You know, I mean, this is not their home. This is not, you know, where they were born or anything like that. And I just thought, what is this going to be like? You know, images of refugee camps came to mind. And when we got there, Dharamsala was just so filled with joy. You know, even thinking about it right now gets me a little emotional, but, And I think it was around a festival time because, mm-hmm. you know, they had all this cool stuff going on at this outdoor auditorium and we just spent, I think, a few days there. I can't remember how many days, but we stayed at this little hotel called Hotel Tibet. And, you know, you could see where the Dalai Lama lived not too far away. And we did lots of stuff just in Dharamsala itself. And I still just walk away with thinking how joyful people were there. You know, there wasn't this element of, you know, we're refugees and we're so sad and life is just so terrible. You know, it really was like, well, this is where we're at, you know, and we have our practice. So that's what we're doing. And I think that was probably the turning point for me as far as like committing to it and saying, I want to learn more about this. And we knew that Jude knew and had connections already with the Tibetan Sangha here in town with Geshe Jamyang. And then we just started going to Thursday night practice, which is mostly just mindfulness, shamatha meditation. And slowly but surely kind of got over that physical pain of sitting to the point where we could talk more about, you know, what is going on, you know, with my thoughts and things like that. And really, you know, got a lot from that, you know. And I think just, you know, having kids and stuff has changed our practice. I think now, obviously, more of what we do is I try to take that practice just into my everyday life. I work in public transportation, so I'm a director of operations at a small public transportation system here in Olympia. And we just provide a really great service for people that, and to everybody. You know, maybe folks don't have cars or can't afford to have a car, but it's also this broader connection to the environment and offering other options, you know, besides driving alone. And I also feel like my connection to the people that work for us, like our drivers, they have really challenging jobs sometimes. And so I see my role as kind of taking my spirituality to that is just trying to be open to what they show up with every day. Because they have a lot of their own challenges too sometimes. And then I'm always interested in what makes people tick, you know, whether it's somebody that rides the bus or if it's one of our drivers, I always kind of want to hear their story, you know, and because it's just, you know, it's fascinating. People are fascinating to me in different ways than they're probably fascinating to Jude, but they're fascinating to me. And I think whatever joy or comfort I can bring to people just in an interaction is where I try to focus most of my practice right now. So. Mm-hmm.